particularly to a controlled substance, to alcohol or drugs or whatever. That they are the popular conception is that they are ill and they have an addiction and, it becomes greater than they are. It becomes more powerful than they are. Here's one of the things that he says. John Booth Davies. He says, most people who use drugs do so for their own reasons, on purpose, because they like it, and because they find no adequate reason for not doing so, rather than because they fall prey to some addictive illness which removes their capacity for voluntary behavior. He claims that researchers who have studied this, and he claims this, let me stress that, have selectively gathered information that is consistent with the view that this that these people have fallen prey to an addictive illness. And he says, no, we got to change that. We've got to turn that around and say that drug use is voluntary and involves making and implementing personal decisions. Now, he talks about alcohol because that's always the other, you know, the other side of the coin. When we talk about drug addiction, we talk about illegal drugs. But alcohol is one of the most addictive drugs around, and there are lots of drug addicts out there who've never stuck a needle in their arm or smoked a marijuana cigarette nor taken a funny pill, but drink themselves crazy on a regular basis. They are, by the classic definition, addicts, drug addicts, too. Now, he goes on to talk about that, and he says, you know, that most alcohol users are social drinkers. Social drinkers. Most people that use alcohol use it, you know, control it, not a problem. Some people are alcoholics in the sense that they are unable to moderate their use of alcohol. He says nonsense, basically. He says, basically, they choose to go down that path. They choose to drink, and they choose to drink too much for whatever reasons. And he doesn't say it's necessarily a conscious decision, but nonetheless, it is a decision that they make. They are not without a certain amount of control and so on. So I want to ask you about that this morning, if you will. Take a few minutes here and reply to Daryl's letter. Daryl agrees with this theory and says we should just round them all up and force them to take therapy. Do you think that drug addiction, whether it's alcohol or illicit drugs, do these people have a choice? Do they deserve our sympathy or our disdain? Now, you've heard me say in this program before that I believe, it's what I believe, you're entitled to your own opinion, I believe that we waste a lot of money sending the police after drug abusers. I think it's a health problem, whether it's a mental health problem or a personal confidence problem or whatever it is, I think we turn them into criminals. I don't think there's any direct relationship between most kinds of drug abuse and becoming a criminal. Society turns them into criminals. However, that's what I believe. But this is very interesting to me because if this guy's right, maybe I'm on the wrong track. If it is voluntary in some way, some form, that addicts are making a decision to be addicts, to do it because, as he says, that they enjoy it, it's fun, and they have no reason to stop. We're going to pause for a little news here. When we return, the lines will be open at 643-1290, and I invite you to think about this and give me a call. Are they sick people, or are they just people who lack the moral fiber to stand up and take it like the rest of us? 643-1290, and we'll continue our conversation right after the news. Here's Ms. Dawn Kelly.
And it is 11:02. Fire crews still on the scene of a smoldering ruin that used to be a warehouse at the corner of Adelaide and Pall Mall. It went up about 3 o'clock this morning, and according to fire officials, the blaze began in 4 different areas at about the same time. The investigation and the cleanup are continuing. The real estate market in London is booming. Sales up almost 62% over the same time last year. Real Estate Board President Dennis Broom says it's not just first-time home buyers who are in the market anymore.
It means that the higher priced houses are going to be moving again. It means that the existing homeowners have better confidence in the marketplace and in the economy. Interest rates, again, at their lowest rate they've been in since the 1950s, allows people to move up into larger priced home, probably at the same kind of cost that they're living at right in today's marketplace.
Broom says the real estate sector affects every other part of the economy because new homes mean new appliances, carpets, and renovation supplies. It reads like something out of a movie. A man from Paris who bilked investors out of millions drops out of sight in Europe. 6 years later, a murder suspect in England is found to be living under an assumed name. In reality, they're one and the same person, Albert Walker. In Torquay, England, newspaper reporter Paul James says when he was arrested, Walker was going by the name of David Davis.
David Davis, as he was known up till yesterday, is on a charge of murdering Ronald Platt, a 51-year-old Essex businessman. And that's David Davis, otherwise known as Albert Walker.
Police in England say that Walker, his 21-year-old daughter, who fled the country with him, and her two small children, we're all living in the dead man's home. With the government, and especially the prime minister, riding so high in the polls these days, the opposition has obviously been avoiding personal attacks, at least up until now. Reporter Dan Duga says a Tory senator, Marjorie Le Breton, has described Jean Chrétien as someone who has a problem with the truce.
Le Breton says that story of Chrétien's about speaking with the homeless, which he later corrected to say he didn't do on a regular basis, wasn't a lapse of memory. It was an out-and-out lie. She says he's lied often about things, and she calls it a revolting character flaw swallowed whole by a media sucked in by his handlers.
Le Breton is the woman in Brian Mulroney's office who kept the list of loyal conservatives available for government jobs also, apparently. The weather forecast calling for a mix of sun and cloud for today, but pretty heavy on the cloud cover. A chance of a touch of light rain or a few flurries this afternoon with a high of 3 today. Clouds, scattered flurries, and a low of minus 2 tonight. Mainly cloudy and windy tomorrow with light snow in the morning and a high of plus 2. Clouds Friday with a slight chance of flurries and a high of 3. And right now it is plus 2 Celsius, which is, Jim, for those who are Fahrenheit challenged, or Celsius challenge, sorry, 36 Fahrenheit.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly.
You're welcome.
Sounds like Marjorie got a pretty good job for herself there, too, off that list.
Yeah. Didn't she? Yeah. And this is Joe waiting to talk to you on line one.
This is Talk of the Town. I'm Jim Chapman, and we're talking about addiction this morning. Although it's open phones, we're here to talk about whatever's on your mind. But Joe joins us next. Hello, Joe.
Hello there, Jim. I found those comments rather interesting. I think that we may be able to do our own study, because we have a fairly large pool of people to deal with that I think fall into the categories you mentioned,
yeah.
And that is cigarette smokers.
Uh-huh.
I believe that there's a very large pool of people who cigarette smoke because they want to.
Yes.
And there's some who cigarette smoke because they feel they cannot break the habit.
Uh-huh.
And there's some that are sort of in between that feel that they can just sort of quit and stop and start up again whenever they feel like.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a perfect pool to be able to do some studies, to maybe get some really conclusive evidence. I think that some people, do through their own, I guess, will, can't stop smoking cigarettes. They just seem that they have no will. It would appear, anyways, the way they talk.
But the question then is, Joe, and this is where Dr. John Booth Davies, his contention would be about those people. His contention in the book is that they want to smoke.
That if they
really didn't want to smoke, they would stop.
That may be true, and that's what I mean. Maybe we need to find out by studying this large pool of people who smoke cigarettes. I think this is a perfect example of being able to find out whether it's a will or whether it's a sickness. And I think maybe we could find out by just maybe studying these people, because I think they're a perfect example.
Why not study the drug addicts?
Well, you could do that, too. Well, you could pull them in there, too, because I think that they're showing the same symptoms. I mean,
In his book, he writes about, and again, I haven't read the book, but I've got some excerpts from it here. He writes in the book about the fact that in discussions with addicts, they found that depending on with whom the addict was talking, they would change the picture of their addiction. For example, they had heroin addicts interviewed by former heroin addicts,
right,
and also by just medical personnel who had never been, you know, drug plagued at all.
Yeah.
The addicts characterized themselves to the medical professionals as, oh, I'm an addict and it's a serious
mm-hmm.
habit, and
mm-hmm.
but to their peers, to the, you know, former addicts that they talked to, they were much less serious. I can kind of take it. It's not a big deal.
So you're saying the recipients are smart enough to sort of feed to the professional what they really want to hear.
And
it's possible that it is sort of systemic in a way.
That's his contention. His contention is that for whatever reason, These people have, and certainly not consciously, but the medical profession has allowed this kind of myth to build up for a variety of different reasons when he says it's really not that serious. I mean, it's not that it's not that serious, but it's not that simple that your average drug user is not a drug user because they simply cannot walk away from it. They're a drug user because they choose to be one.
Well, it would be very interesting to know that we would suddenly find out that all this time that people were just doing it just out of their own free will, out of their own choice. Yeah.
Well, it puts a different twist on the on my contention that we should not be criminalizing people who are drug addicts.
Yeah.
If he's right, maybe we are doing the right thing.
Well, it's very possible that we've just been feeding, you know, the rest of us just a line to sort of, I don't know, toe the line maybe, or say what's expected of us, and just sort of leave it at that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's really going on. Maybe we've been pulling the wool over everybody's eyes all these times.
You never know. Thanks for the call today, Joe.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What do you think about this addiction? I mean, are addicts really sick people? I've got addicts listening to me right now. You know who you are. There are people listening to this program right this minute who are addicted to cigarettes, who are addicted to alcohol, who are addicted to food, who eat too much, who are addicted to drugs, illicit and otherwise. Do you think that addiction really exists in the classic sense that we've accepted it, that it's something that takes things beyond your control? Or is Dr. Davies right when he says that it's a decision for almost everyone? It's a decision. And they take drugs or abuse alcohol or whatever the case may be because they want to at some level. What do you think? 643-1290.
Come and see why Rock and Rack is...
Dr. John Booth Davies. He's a social psychologist, and he's the head of the Addiction Research Group at the University of Strathclyde in Scotland. So he is, in fact, a legit guy, and it's a legit book. Whether it's legit conclusions or not remains to be seen. 643-1290 is our telephone number. If you're just joining us, we're talking about this new book by Dr. Davies. It's called The Myth of Addiction. And his premise, I want to read this to you. This is interesting. This is the dedication of the book, and this explains his theory. He said, "I wrote this book because I wanted to. Nobody made me do it. I did it on purpose. I was certainly not forced into it by circumstances. Finally, I wrote it for me. It would be dishonest to attribute it to some other person." That's his point. And he goes on to say, "Most people who use drugs do so for their own reasons, on purpose, because they like it, and because they find no adequate reason for not doing so, rather than because they fall prey to some addictive illness which removes their capacity for voluntary behavior." And he's talking about illicit drugs and alcohol here, too. And we're asking you what you think about that this morning. 643-1290, and Gord joins us. Hi, Gord.
Hi, Jim. This is no big revelation. I think Thomas Saz has been saying this for 25 years. Basically, what we're talking about is behavior, correct?
Well, I suppose that's the result, isn't it? Yes. Well, the cause and the result.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would say all behavior is voluntary. And all these theories about the causation of behavior is nonsense, except for the idea of people willing it to happen. The idea that violence in society is caused by external factors is nonsense. The idea that addiction is caused by anything other than a will to make it happen is nonsense, period.
What if, though, what if addiction is, in fact, an illness?
An illness.
What if?
Can't be demonstrated. There's no lesion. If you look up the definition of disease, for example, you won't find that addiction could be defined as an illness, because an illness is not defined as an addiction if you really carefully look at the definition of the word.
Well, what about if we go beyond the letter of the law and look at the spirit of the law as far as the word is concerned? I mean, depression, which we talked about earlier on the show, you know, is depression a disease? There are not necessarily any lesions with depression or scars or visible wounds.
No, there are some theories that there is a process of chemical imbalances which causes depression in people.
Yeah.
Now, that would be outside of the realm of will.
Okay. So anything that is beyond the control of your mind, then you're exempting that. But things that you can control.
Right. And that's why I think that it still does not change whether the drugs should be legal or illegal, though. Drugs should be perfectly legal because people should be allowed to ingest what they want to ingest because it should be an individual choice.
What are the implications, do you think, for if people were to start to buy his theory? Do you think it would have a positive effect on society or a negative effect? Seems to me there'd be a lot of people who would be ready to say, anybody who uses anything is, we've got to make the laws even tougher because they're just doing it because they want to do it. They don't have a problem. Let's make the laws even tougher.
Well, I think that would be kind of thuggish on their part.
Yes, but that's not the first time that thuggish things have happened in society.
Well, it's true, but I mean, we should let people behave in certain fashions if they do not physically hurt other people or do not defraud other people. And that's it, period. As a principle, that should be applied across the board. And if people say, well, we should put people in jail for ingesting certain products, I'd say they're wacko.
Gord, let me ask you this question about that. One of the great concerns that the law enforcement people have about the abuse of substances is the difficulty it creates for them, the difficulty it can create for individuals in controlling their own behavior after they've ingested, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever. And the other problem law enforcement people particularly have is that it's very difficult to tell if someone's character has been altered and they're violent or suicidal or whatever they may be. It's very difficult to tell what drugs they may have taken. So a little easier with alcohol, they can give them a breathalyzer and they know. If we were to say, okay, we're going to make all drugs legal, we know that there are people, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, who are going to abuse those things, who are going to drive, who are going to do all sorts of things they shouldn't be doing. How do we address that problem in the kind of wide open society that you're talking about? Because
you're talking sort of a preventative measure.
Well, because you're talking about a society where individual responsibility is paramount, and I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
But what if you don't live up to your responsibility in that society? Say, for example, that you take a handful of uppers and a three or four shots of whiskey and get behind the wheel of your car and kill somebody. In that society, what kind of sanction?
You'd have to take responsibility for the action even if you didn't ingest it. So that would be no excuse.
But would you see in a society like that that perhaps the sanctions against that would be much harsher than they are in this society?
Well, they should be now anyways. What we do to people who hurt other people now is pretty pathetic now, in my opinion anyway. So
we just need to extend it further in that situation as well.
Well, yeah. I think right now what we do is we tend to excuse people who abuse substances. The drunken defense issue.
But that's
crazy.
But what do we do? What's the alternative? We say now, okay, a guy gets behind the wheel of his car and kills somebody, and it happens every month in this country somewhere. And they kill somebody, and they'll get 2 years or 3 years. Maybe if it's a really horrible, horrible thing, they might get 4 years in jail for it. They have ended the lives of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, however many people. And the most we can seem to do is to slap them on the wrist and put them in jail for 4 or 5 years. Now, on the one hand, we say, well, that's pretty non-productive to lock them up for that period of time. I mean, there's nothing being served here except perhaps justice. On the other hand, there are people who say they should never get out of jail. How do we balance those two? Now, you're a great believer in civil liberties and individual responsibilities. If you were the judge and they said, Gord, we want you to set up a new system. We're going to make, everybody can do anything they want as long as they do it responsibly. What are we going to do with the people who are irresponsible?
Well, I would think that justice would be paramount in that issue. I mean, the principle is that you should do no harm to others.
But is justice an eye for an eye?
But if you do harm to others, then you should be put away to the fullest extent possible. And I think if you kill people, you should be put away forever, period.
End of story.
Right. I even though I'm a civil libertarian and believe that people should have freedom, doesn't mean that I think they should get away with murder,
right?
Because I think that is in principle wrong, and what we're doing now is we're allowing people to get away with murder, sometimes, and under the drunken defense issue. And I think it's ludicrous. And I think it's part and parcel of this idea that addiction is something that is not under our control.
But Warren Allman said, the former Solicitor General, said not too long ago on a show that I hosted, that it was a waste of time to necessarily lock people up for a long period of time. He's talking about Section 745.
Well, waste of time for who?
Well, he said, you know, we were wasting these human lives of these people. That
yeah, but hold on. Whose life did they waste in the first place?
That's obviously the good response. But his contention is that those people are already dead. Why add to the tragedy by locking people up for the rest of their lives?
Well, I think we have to stick by the idea that justice is paramount, and that if you do harm to others, you have to take the responsibility for it. And if your life is wasted because of that, so be it.
All righty. Thanks for the call, Gord.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
643-1290. We're going to pause for a moment. I want to change the direction just a little bit, although I'm still looking for your thoughts on this addiction idea. Is it a myth, as John Booth Davies' book suggests? The book itself is called The Myth of Addiction. Do you think it is a myth? Is it just a case of individual choice? And I want to broaden it a little bit to ask you about this issue of punishment, too. What is appropriate? You know, you get somebody that climbs behind the wheel of a car and kills two or three or four people, and in this country, they're probably out in less than 3 years. Now, Warren Allman and many people who agree with him say, well, they should be, because they made a small mistake. It was a tragic mistake for someone, but it was a small mistake, and what's the point of locking them up forever? I mean, what's the point of doing that? Other people like Gord say, hey, justice is justice, and justice must be done. What do you think? 643-1290.
I worked. I kept a full-time job for years and years. My bills were always paid. I never went without for my addiction, nor my wife. So you lie to yourself and you say, oh, I'm all right. I can handle it, you know. And because you're not suffering. The bills are paid. You're not losing your house. And you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
And I really am sincere about this. I really want to know, because I don't know the answer. You were married, you had a successful marriage, you had a job, you paid your bills. What was the downside to your addiction?
What was the downside?
Yeah.
It's you live for it. If you don't have it, it affects your moods. And it was, for me, it was affecting my health.
Okay, yeah.
And another thing you do is you pick a person that you know, and you say... I heard these things in addiction, and I totally related with them. And,
right.
And a lot of people I talk to shake their head, you know. You pick someone that you know, and you say, boy, if I ever get as bad as that guy, boy, that's when I'm going to quit. And then when you do get that bad, you pick someone else who's worse. It's all lying to yourself.
So
and it's hard to quit on your own.
So it sounds to me like you believe this guy, though, that it's a decision-making process rather than a physical process.
I don't want to call it a disease, but I don't call it that. But, I can be around people who are smoking pot and that. It doesn't bother me because I made that choice to stop. I couldn't do it on my own. I went through a 30-day program and they give you the tools, you know. There's always a reason why you do that.
Yeah.
You know, you like to get high. For me to say that I don't miss it, I'd be lying. I do miss it because I like to get high. It's a euphorious feeling.
Yeah.
That's why people drink.
Yeah.
Personally, I think marijuana should be legalized. God made marijuana, man made alcohol. Who are you going to trust?
Interesting point today. James, thank you for the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Very interesting point. On tomorrow's program, well, Heather Weiss will be here. She's the new chair of the Board of Education. And I talked to Heather earlier, and she said she's really looking forward to coming on tomorrow to straighten a few things out.